the seat. He began to concentrate on his breathing, clearing his mind of all extraneous thoughts so he could expand his battle awareness. Orlov stepped up behind the chair and snuffled for attention. "Not now," Titus said. "I need to meditate."
"Of course you do," Orlov replied. "I just wanted to report that your Stealth X is ready for launch."
"Thank you." Orlov did not go away. "Is there something else?" Titus asked.
"Admiral Otoko is insisting that you give him permission to scuttle the fleet. He claims he has the authority to do it without your approval."
"Does he really think the Wookiees are going to board through that?" Titus waved at the firestorm outside. "Tell him to hang on for 2 minutes. If he hasn't heard from me by then, he's free to do as he wishes."
"Very well,"
Orlov said, then continued to hover.
"What?" "Your Stealth X has room for only one person, Colonel," he said. "How am I to escape?"
"I'm trying to work on that now," Titus said, "but I need to meditate." Orlov retreated quickly and quietly. Titus resumed his breathing exercise, expanding his force awareness to encompass his own fleet, then all fleets in the battle, and finally, when he still hadn't located the source of his nagging hope, the entire theater of combat. The hope grew stronger, summoning him in the direction of the Boffin fleet, urging him to come toward it. The hope continued to pull, so hard now that Titus almost felt as if he were being physically dragged. Titus stopped and followed the feeling to its source, to well beyond the Boffin fleet, where he found a broken, twisted presence that had been inserting itself into his struggles far too often of late. A Lima Rar. But something was different. Her power seemed greatly magnified, far too ancient and somehow even darker than before. Alima continued to pull at him, filling her presence with the promise of salvation and victory and, well, some other things in which he had no interest. It would be crazy to rush the Boffin fleet, as she was urging, and the Twi'lek was hardly someone to be trusted with one's life or destiny, but the maneuver would be the last thing the enemy expected. And what was there to lose? Titus dropped back into his chair. "Orlov!"
"Yes, Colonel?"
Orlov stopped behind him.
"Have you thought of a way for me to escape?"
"We're all going to escape," Titus said. "Have Admiral Otoko turn on the Boffin fleet. He's to confront it head-on, full acceleration. Any vessels too damaged to keep pace will act as our rear guard. Starfighters will jump to Rendezvous Alpha."
"We're attacking?"
"Now, Orlov," Titus replied. "If Admiral Otoko gives that scuttle order, you won't need an escape vessel."
"At once, Colonel."
Orlov scurried away. As Titus sank back into his battle meditation, a desperate craving for sleep rose inside him. His body was telling him that it needed to heal. Of course, Titus had no time for rest. He expanded his force awareness again and found himself momentarily lost in the maelstrom of fear and bitterness that was the Fifth Fleet. He began to sift through the emotions, seeking out those who felt most calm, those who seemed to be in command, and started to brush them with his confidence and hope. Soon, small eddies of calm and composure began to swirl through the storm. Titus turned his attention on the heart of the fleet, where he could feel Admiral Otoko's defiant presence fuming over his orders, no doubt contemplating whether to issue the scuttle order anyway. Titus filled his thoughts with the conviction that they would escape, that it was his destiny to survive and unite the galaxy, then began to press down on Otoko's presence. The Admiral seemed startled at first, then confused, but his resistance quickly yielded to obedience, and Titus continued to press. A few moments later, a ripple of astonishment rolled through the force, then quickly became determination as the fleet changed course. The brilliance outside seemed to slide across the observation bubble for a moment, then gradually broke into individual blossoms of energy as the enemy gunners began to worry about overshots hitting a friendly fleet. Titus began to glimpse individual bolts of turbolaser fire fanning out from the Boffin batteries. As the Fifth struck back, tiny blossoms of color erupted against the distant darkness. A shudder raced through the force as the Alliance cruiser Redma suddenly lost its shields and came apart, and whirls of panic and anguish enveloped other vessels as they took hits and began to spit beings and equipment into the void. But overall, the crews of the Fifth remained focused on the attack, too absorbed in their duties to fall prey to the fear and fatalism that had crippled them earlier. Incredibly, the Bothans did not fall back. They simply held their position and continued to exchange fire with the Fifth, which, even battered as it was, had them outgunned, outnumbered, and outclassed. Concerned the Bothans were laying a trap, Kaidus extended his force awareness to their fleet and was consumed by a rush of fiery pain as his body struggled to remain functional. He opened himself completely to the Force, drawing it in through the power not of his anger or fear. He was too exhausted and sad to feel either, but through his faith in his destiny, through the love that gave him the strength to serve that destiny, through his love not only of Alana, but also of Tenno Ka, of Luke and Ben and even Mara, of Jaina and his parents, and all the others who had betrayed him, of his allies and enemies, and his dead mentors. He drew the Force in through his love of them all, of the entire galaxy he was sacrificing himself to save. The pain remained, but with it came the strength Kaidus needed to remain conscious. When he focused his attention on the Bothan fleet again, he began to sense an odd uncertainty among the commanders, and a dark power behind it. Alima Rar was somehow influencing them, instilling in their minds an atypical indecision. Kaidus suspected they were thinking he was too smart to do this, that surely he knew all they had to do was fall back and let their allies catch the Fifth in a devastating crossfire. He began to press down on them, affirming that belief. Yes, he knew. Kaidus' vision darkened around the edges, and he began to feel lightheaded. Still, he continued to exert pressure, trying to build on the indecision Alima had instilled in them, hoping they would conclude that he wanted them to retreat. That was all it took. The Bothan presences grew decisive, and the fans of their turbolaser fire started to expand as they accelerated toward the Fifth. Then Kaidus' vision closed in, and he felt himself sinking even deeper into his battle meditation, completely through it, to a time not long in the future, when this war would be over, when the galaxy would be safe and calm, when he would once again have his family and friends there beside him, helping him to rule in justice and peace.
Aboard the Dragon Queen.
That was the dumbest move I've ever seen,
Han declared to anyone listening, which, given his volume, was everyone in the great parlay chamber of Tenno Ka's flagship, the Dragon Queen.
And I've seen some pretty dumb moves. What in blazes made you advance when they turned on you?
Admiral Babo's yellow eyes flashed gold, but he accepted the indignity with a polite smile that managed to bear only the tips of his Bothan fangs. Sitting at the conference table with them were a couple of dozen brass hats from the impromptu coalition that had just tried to blast Jason into a bad memory.
We believed it was an alliance feint, Babo explained. It never dawned on us that he would intend to carry through with such a foolhardy attack.
It couldn't have been that foolhardy. It worked.
Like nearly everyone else who had watched Jason's miraculous escape a few hours earlier, Han was still trying to figure out how the Bothans had let it happen.
All you had to do was fall back. We would have had him trapped.
Which the enemy certainly realized, Babo replied. Your son is a master tactician, Captain Solo. We had to account for that in our thinking.
Leia laid a calming hand on Han's arm, then said, Jason was lucky. He took a gamble, assuming you would overthink the situation, and you did exactly that. There may also have been some Force pressure involved, Luke added from the end of the table. The Colonel may be using ancient battle meditation techniques to confuse his opponents. Babo's ears pricked up.
That would explain a lot, and it would give the Confederation even more reason to invite Kashyyyk, the Hapen Consortium, and the Jedi Order into our coalition.
Tenno Ka roused herself from her poised silence at the head of the table, then said,
I hope Botha Wee hasn't misinterpreted the actions of the Hapen Consortium here today.
She had used her Force talents to hide all indications of the tears she had shed after firing on Jason. but the pain still showed in the restrained quality of her gestures.
In no way do we share or condone the Confederation's recent aggression, and the Galactic Alliance retains our full support.
Babo brought his bushy brows together.
But you attacked Colonel Solo!
Colonel Solo is not the Alliance,
Tenel Ka replied simply. This is Mark Thompson. We hope you've enjoyed this production of Star Wars, Legacy of the Force, Inferno, by Troy Denning. This program was produced, directed, and abridged by Kevin Thompson, executive producer Jacob Bronstein. Star Wars, Legacy of the Force, Inferno is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2007, all rights reserved, used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music published by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music Master Production, copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audio presentation, all rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.